This is Sports Talk with Phil Kornblut, Chris Bergen, and Pat Daniel. Sports Talk is heard across the state on radio affiliates of the Sports Talk Media Network and is streaming live on sportstalksc.com, as well as Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube. The South Carolina Education Lottery lucky number to call in is 888-898-2525. That's 888-898-2525. Now, here are Phil, Chris, and Pat with tonight's edition of Sports Talk.
And good evening, everybody. Welcome to Sports Talk here on the Sports Talk Media Network. Welcome in to the Wednesday night edition. It's a very busy night for us here on Sports Talk. Phil Kornblut on the way to Memphis for Clemson and New Mexico. First round of the NCAA men's basketball tournament. That will take place on Friday afternoon. Meantime, Chris Bergen is up in Pittsburgh, where South Carolina went through practice today and went through the media session today. The Gamecocks to take on Oregon tomorrow afternoon at around 3 o'clock in their first-round game of the NCAA men's tournament. So we look forward to covering all that for you. We'll hear from the Gamecocks tonight and get their thoughts about being back in the tournament, about playing this very good Oregon team, what some of the keys are. And Chris will share his thoughts on what he heard today from Lamont Paris and Dana Altman. Also coming up tonight, we'll have comments from USC's offensive coordinator in football. That's right, the Gamecocks got spring football practice going on, though they didn't practice today. Dowell Loggins and Clayton White, the coordinators, met with the media today. We'll hear from Loggins tonight. One thing he revealed is that Sean Riley is no longer with the program as an offensive analyst. He's gone back to the NFL. But Mike Shula, former head coach at Alabama, has joined the Gamecocks as an analyst this year. So he'll have some thoughts on that. Also, it's an SC Wild night tonight. We'll have Major Billy Downer with us at 7:30 as we look ahead to a big weekend for the Department of Natural Resources and for all people who love the great outdoors in South Carolina, because this weekend at the State Fairgrounds, it is the annual Sportsman's Classic. And that is really one of the great events in our state, even for a guy like me, who's not a great outdoorsman by any means, okay? It is a lot of fun to go to just to see all the different things that are for sale. It's a big fair-type setting. It's just a great event. It draws 40, 50,000 people over the weekend if the weather permits. We'll get all the details from Major Downer coming up at 7:30. But right now, let's welcome in Chris Bergen from the Three Rivers City, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. He's had a busy day with the Gamecocks at practice, writing stories, taking pictures, sending out tweets, listening to what the coaches had to say, not just the Gamecocks and the Duckies, but also some of the other teams who are in for practice. Good evening, sir.
Hello, sir. And for a state that proudly presents to us every year Groundhog's Day over in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania, I think the groundhog forgot this portion of the state over here in western Pennsylvania. It is supposed to start snowing here in the next 30 minutes or so, and the low tonight's in the 20s. So the wind chill here in Pittsburgh has been brutal today, so it was a good deal we weren't out at spring football practice for the Panthers. Nice to be inside the PPG Paints Arena in downtown Pittsburgh. But a good day. Gamecocks appear to be a confident bunch going into tomorrow's matchup. The players actually talked about, you know, they respect what Oregon has done, especially here of late, and how can you not with them running through the Pac-12 and winning that final installment of the Pac-12 tournament. But one thing they said is, hey, yeah, but they haven't faced our defense yet. So we'll see how that goes. But they seem to be a confident bunch, and this has not been a place that's been kind to Pittsburgh, or excuse me, kind to the Gamecocks in Pittsburgh. Hate to rub salt in the wounds, but of course the infamous Coppin State win over South Carolina when the Gamecocks were about a 2 seed happened here in Pittsburgh. And the only time that Lamont Paris took his UT Chattanooga team to the tournament, they lost to Illinois in, you guessed it, Pittsburgh. Mm. So they are hoping to change some recent and past history tomorrow afternoon against Oregon.
What does the arena look like to you?
Oh, it's a beautiful facility. It houses the Pittsburgh Penguins of the National Hockey League. Seats about probably, I'm guessing, 18 to 20,000. Very well set up, a good facility. Deep end zones, which might present some issues. Not nearly the issues that you deal with when you go to the Final Four and put a basketball court in the middle of a football stadium. But there will be maybe some sight lines that are you take a little while to get used to. And I thought it was interesting today, Dana Altman, the head coach at Oregon, talked about how they were going to use their 40 minutes session out on the practice floor. Normally, it's just go through layup drills, shoot some threes, try some mid-court shots, just have some fun out there. He actually said they were going to do some practice. He wanted to see his team get up and down the floor because, of course, they had the long cross-country flight in here yesterday, so he wanted to get them out and get their legs back underneath him. Went on to say during the press conference he didn't think that was going to be a big deal. He would have been more concerned had they flown in today and had to play tomorrow, but he felt like since they got in yesterday, they'll be fine. Gamecocks, on the other hand, basically just put shots up for 40 minutes, and then they were done.
How would you judge the mood of the Gamecocks? Comments from Lamont Paris, we'll hear from him and some of the players, but do they seem, not Paris, but the players, do they seem a bit in awe of their surroundings? Or, because these are older guys, when you talk about Talon Cooper, you talk about Michi Johnson and B.J. Mack, these aren't freshmen, sophomores. These guys have been around college basketball for 3, 4, 5 years. Might be, in some cases, their first step into this particular spotlight. But how'd you think the players were handling everything?
I think they're ready to go. As I mentioned a few minutes ago, they feel like or seem like a confident bunch. Just listening to some of their comments today, felt pretty good about going into the matchup against Oregon. I thought it was interesting, Michi Johnson talking a lot about how excited he is. This is basically a homecoming for him, being from Ohio. He's got tons of friends and family that will be coming in. And I guess the Gamecocks are hoping that maybe the Akron fans will stick around and cheer for them, because Dana Altman mentioned that he'll have the Creighton fans sticking around to cheer for Oregon. Of course, that's where he was before he went to Oregon and really did a nice job in Omaha. He has a lot of fond memories of Omaha, so Gamecocks can use every extra fan they can possibly get. And then Talon Cooper touching on the fact that he had a chance to play in the NCAA tournament, but that was during the COVID year, so he's excited about the opportunity to get back, and B.J. Mack was extremely excited. They all seem very, very excited, but grounded, I think it's probably the best word. They're all excited. They understand the moments. But to them, it's just they're trying to treat it, and you'll hear from Lamont Paris, and I thought he brought up a great point about this. You try and treat the NCAA tournament as just another game, but it couldn't be further from the truth. The NCAAs are entirely different than anything you go through, even the conference tournaments. You've got more media obligations. You've got more fans who will show up and watch an NCAA game that may not have seen your team play all year. You're in a strange arena. So there are a lot of different things that you don't normally get during the regular season, but I think they feel pretty confident about their chances tomorrow. I think they'll come out and play well.
Yeah, a funny thing about the NCAA tournament and excitement about being there and all that. And I remember Dave Odom made this comment in the 1 year he took the Gamecocks to the NCAA tournament, and they played in Kansas City, and they happened to play the first game of the day, and this would have been on a Friday. They played the first game of the day in the entire tournament on Friday against Memphis, coached by John Calipari, and the Gamecocks lost. And it really wasn't a close game. So they were done by Eastern time. They were done by 2 o'clock. And like he said afterwards, you lose in the first round, and you lose the very first game in the first round, and you're done by 2 o'clock. It's like you weren't in the tournament at all. You know, you were in the tournament, but you just don't have the feeling that you were in the tournament. So the point is, winning that first round game, getting a chance to get to the round of 32 with an eye towards the second weekend, then you kind of feel like you're definitely in the tournament. I know you're in the tournament, but that feeling of being a part of the tournament, you got to get that first round win and be around for the second day.
Well, and certainly if you're playing Thursday at noon and you're done by 2 o'clock, yeah, you almost weren't in the tournament, Phil, because nobody else has played yet. You're one of the first teams to disappear. Yeah. And it's almost, as you pointed out, it's almost like you weren't in it. So the one advantage or disadvantage, I'm not sure how the coaches will handle this, but having a game go in front of you, maybe you can get out and watch a little bit, absorb the atmosphere, and then go get ready for your ball game. So maybe not playing the first game of the day tomorrow. That'll be Akron and Creighton. That actually might work to both South Carolina and Oregon's advantage. Though Oregon is a much more seasoned postseason team, Dana Altman always seems to take his teams to the NCAA tournament. So they may be a little bit more used to this setup and the environment and the like, but still, it's a big deal for both teams, regardless of whether you've been there 20 straight years or this is your first year ever going, which is funny. Listening to some of the local radio around here in Pittsburgh, they're all excited about Duquesne. And Duquesne's actually the host school here in Pittsburgh for the regional at the PPG Paints Arena, where the Gamecocks will be. But their hometown team, Duquesne, is actually in Omaha. And if I'm not mistaken, it's the first time since the 70s that Duquesne has made an NCAA tournament. So that's all the talk on radio is about the Dukes and a chance. Do they have a chance to go to the second round? So this is turning in quickly to a basketball city, both a sort of a satellite city for Duquesne and then with the tournament here in town as well.
Well, tomorrow, Chris will be on the site watching the Gamecocks play their game. I'll be in Memphis, and Clemson and the other teams in Memphis will be going through their press conferences and their practices tomorrow. Clemson will have their press conference Eastern time with the players at 1:35 Eastern time, and then Brad Brownell will meet with the media 1:50 Eastern time. Then the Tigers will have their practice session from 2:15 to 2:55 Eastern time. So we'll have that covered for you tomorrow as well. Let's don't forget, we've got the College of Charleston out in Spokane, Washington, preparing to take on Alabama on Friday in their first round game. I caught a little bit of one of the CBS Network's TV shows once I got to the hotel, and they had analysts on talking about the tournament. I don't remember which one it was, couldn't identify him, but he happened to be talking about New Mexico, and this particular analyst called New Mexico his most unpredictable team. He said that they have some very splashy guards, of course, in House and Mashburn Jr., a couple of guards that can light you up. They can score a lot of points. They can turn you over. They can get a lot of steals. They're very good defensively. He called New Mexico his most unpredictable team. New Mexico scares as an 11 seed. I say scares. I mean, they should scare anybody that they're playing. Mm-hmm. You know, Clemson has the, I'm not going to say the unfortunate draw of New Mexico here, but maybe it is an unfortunate draw. Is New Mexico perhaps the best 11 seed that Clemson could have faced in this particular case?
Well, listening to another ESPN analyst, and one I think a lot of folks will recognize his name, Jay Billis, was talking about both of the matchups that our in-state teams have. And he said New Mexico is by far the most underseeded team in the tournament, especially as an 11. He said they're much better than that. And he actually said they've got a pathway to get to the Sweet 16. So my guess is as he fills out a bracket, he's probably got them getting past Clemson on Friday. And then he also talked about Oregon and said the way that the Ducks are playing right now, they're not underseeded because of their struggles early in the season. But they may, much like New Mexico, be an awfully, awfully good 11 seed. And I got the sense he was going to pick them to win over South Carolina tomorrow.
All right. Well, you know what? They both got difficult challenges ahead of them. I mean, a six seed is by no means considered an automatic winner when it comes to the NCAA tournament. I mean, anything, you're seeded, anything outside of really, what would you say, a three, maybe even a two. You know, maybe the threes are looked at as teams that are most likely going to advance. Once you start getting four, five, six, you're starting to play some pretty good teams. You might not know much about them. They might be from the mid-majors, but they play good basketball. In a lot of cases, you know, basketball is their thing. I would say at New Mexico, basketball is their thing. They play in an arena that has hosted a national championship, has hosted a Final Four, the Pit. Well, that thing seats about, what, 20, 21,000, and they fill it up when this team is good, and obviously this team is good this year. Oregon, of course, has pretty good football and pretty good baseball, too, so they kind of have a complete sports menu there as well, not to mention track and field. But their basketball team has had its moments, and Dana Altman is a fantastic coach. So I think both of our local teams here can win, obviously. Mm-hmm. They can win. We keep talking about the other teams and their strengths, but, you know, South Carolina and Clemson, they've got their strengths as well, and they have to play to their strengths, do what they do. In South Carolina's case, they've got to have Oregon kind of play at their pace. And in Clemson's case, I think the Tigers just have to come out with some confidence and make some shots. They got to get some early offense from Girard. I think if he gets some early offense, if he makes some shots, then he's going to be feeling good. And I think you got to use P.J. Hall both inside and out. I know he really likes to shoot that outside shot, but he's got a real nasty half hook, I would get him inside and try to get him some shots inside close to the basket, and also need some people to get in there and rebound and help Shefflin when it comes to getting on the board. You can't depend on him to get you 15, 16 rebounds by himself.
I think you'll be able to tell within the first 5 or 6 minutes on Friday afternoon, Phil, whether or not the Tigers are going to have a chance to win. If they come out as flat as they did against Boston College, New Mexico will run them out of the building. But if they come out and play the way we're capable of, we've seen them, and they are capable of playing with some energy and getting on the backboards and the like, I think they stand a really, really good chance, as do the Gamecocks. If they can get the game in their tempo, I think they've got an excellent chance as well. Past history, though, tells you to bet on the 11 seeds. Since over the six of the last seven other NCAA tournaments, and 11 has beaten a six at least twice during the tournament. And since 2014, the 11s are 15 of 28, so a little bit better than 500 against the six. So this is by no stretch of the imagination, as you pointed out, a 314 or 215 or certainly a 116.
Yeah, it's a dangerous position to be in for sure. So we look forward to that, and we'll see what the Gamecocks can do tomorrow, what the Tigers can do on Friday. Again, be sure to follow our coverage on our Twitter at SportsTalkSC, on our website, SportsTalkSC.com, and, of course, right here on the show tomorrow night and Friday night. We got two more games in the first four tonight, Grambling and Montana State. I'm going to tip it off at 6:40 Eastern time. And then Colorado and Boise State will follow with the other game. How about Virginia last night? How disappointing did they look? I mean, my goodness, from a team that was a national champion just a handful of years ago, they've really come up dry in the NCAA tournament. But that was just pathetic last night.
They have not won a game in the tournament, if I'm not mistaken, since they won the national championship. And they were horrible last night. I mean, flat out horrible. There was a stretch from the back half of the first half through halftime into the start of the second half of real time. They didn't score a point in nearly an hour of real time. It was ridiculous how bad they were, and they got good looks. They were shooting air balls from three, missing running layups. I mean, they were just bad offensively. They haven't been really good offensively all season. What they've been able to do is rest their hats on their defense. But after a while, and we've seen it from South Carolina, I think it's probably a much better example, when the Gamecocks are struggling on the offensive end, sooner or later it starts to take its toll on the defensive end, and you see games start to get away from them like the Alabama matchup and the Auburn matchups did. Same thing, I think, happened last night. Virginia, at a certain point in time, just said, look, we're not making shots. There's no way we're going to win this game. And I've heard all day today, well, that's validation that Virginia should not have been in the tournament. No, the validation was they shouldn't have gotten a bid, but the way they played last night shouldn't. And if they won, it wasn't going to be validation that they should have gotten in. It's just once you get into the tournament, everything's up for grabs, and they were just bad. They picked a bad night to be as bad as they were last night.
Hard to ignore, though, Virginia reputation. What did they have, 23 regular season ACC wins, finished in the top four in the ACC. Clemson gets left out in that kind of setting. Not a program like Virginia, but, yeah, they really played poorly last night for sure. A couple of other things to mention, and we may get to some phone calls, 888-898-2525, South Carolina Education Lottery, lucky number for you here on Sports Talk. Make sure you get those brackets in to the Sports Talk SC Bracket Challenge 2024. It's under the ESPN Tournament Challenge. Just look for Sports Talk SC 2024 Bracket Challenge. Man, we've had a nice response, 149 brackets are in. That's an all-time record for us.
That is great.
And the prizes are fantastic. Yeah, me neither. I'm doing mine tonight. I had to wait to see. I had to get into the flow of the first four, kind of get a feeling for things. But winner gets a fantastic prize, two tickets to Darlington. I mean, two primo tickets to Darlington, not something, you know, that you can't see anything. You'll be able to see everything. Two really good tickets to Darlington. Also, two tickets to a Braves game of your choice. Ticket availability, of course, permitting, regular season only, not postseason. That is a fantastic first place prize, and we have a fantastic second place prize. Tonight, my heart is heavy, be heavier tomorrow night, the penultimate night for Pat Daniel as co-host and producer of Sports Talk, as he's leaving us as of tomorrow night to move on to, as they say, bigger and better things. Pat, what you got?
Hey, guys. I'm sorry. I'm still trying to do a bit of production work in the background here. I thought you were going to come to me in a little bit. But, yeah, it's been a pleasure being a part of the program. I hope to still be involved at some point. But life just sometimes calls, and sometimes you just got to do other things, and you got to focus elsewhere. And it's always fun being on here, fun shooting the breeze with you guys, but and love all the listeners out there. And I'll definitely be back, maybe come football season, help out here and there. But right now, just am needed more elsewhere during the day. Just Josh and Brian are going to do a terrific job taking over as producer, and whether you bring in another co-host or not, or let the two of them help chime in, I'm sure Sports Talk won't skip a beat.
You need to get a better. You need to get better priorities, Pat. Sports Talk should be first and foremost.
That's right.
I do think two hosts are plenty, with a third chiming in. You know, Josh chimes in from time to time. I'm not sure that producer B, he doesn't want to be identified. Producer B will say very much. But did you want to say something about the Gamecocks Tigers and their upcoming games?
I would love to at some point. Again, I'd refer to you to the chat there, Corn. I just don't want to say that on air.
Sorry.
But I do have stuff to chime in, but right now I'm sorry. My attention is elsewhere, if y'all can take it back. But the only thing I will say is just adding something to the UVA comments, just how embarrassing that was, not only for them as a program, but also, quite frankly, for the ACC. But if you look back to Tony Bennett's UVA squads, 2018, remember they were the first ever number one seed to get beat by a 16 UMBC. I think they were, what, the Golden Retrievers or something silly like that? Beat them in the first round. And then UVA came back the next year and had their redemption arc where they won the national championship. But if you look at their years since then, they have made the tournament three different times. The 2020-2021 season as a four seed, last year as a four seed, and they lost in the first round both years. And so the Tony Bennett squads at UVA, since winning the national championships, have not made it past the first round of the tournament. And I can't help but wonder, as great as a defensive mastermind as he is that offense just too basic, too vanilla? And teams at this point, especially come postseason play, they know how to shut it down. And once his squads get behind by double digits, I mean, you could put a fork in them. They just are not built to come back and score.
It's like an option team in football. It's like an option team in football that gets down by three touchdowns. They've got no chance to come back at a ball game. And Pat's right. That's exactly where UVA is right now. And the commentators last night made the point that Tony Bennett's got to go out and get some shooters. He's got to find some guys if he wants to continue to play that style. And it's worked well for him, so you can't imagine he's going to go away from it, especially defensively. But they've got to find a way to knock down some outside shots, or they're going to be in the same boat. I mean, when they lose, they lose big. I mean, it's not a 2 or 3 point loss at the buzzer. I mean, they get blown out when they get beaten. This, quite frankly, because they can't score.
Yeah, I think their talent level might be down a little bit too. You go back and look at those really good teams, the national championship team. They had some ballers. They had some really good players, obviously, playing in a very good system and well coached. I'm thinking maybe their talent level might have slipped just a little bit. Okay, couple of other things. Did you know the Major League Baseball season began today? Thank you to Major League Baseball and I guess ESPN for teaming up and actually opening the season in Seoul, South Korea. I'm sure it was a lot of fun for everybody. 5 o'clock in the morning on the East Coast. Were you up to watch that?
I was not. I didn't even realize until I was watching stuff later on this afternoon that the Dodgers and Padres had played. And a funny story coming out. It's not really funny, but there's a story coming out now that Shohei Ohtani has had to fire his interpreter because there are questions surrounding at least $4.5 million in wire transfers that were sent to Ohtani's bank account to a bookmarking operation set off a series of events. My guess is, here we go again with gambling. And if you're the interpreter for, Phil, I don't think it's a stretch to say the most popular, certainly worldwide, baseball phenom in the world right now, just keep your nose clean. I mean, you've got a cushy job. All you have to do is translate from Japanese back into English and vice versa. I mean, it's not really hard, I wouldn't think.
How do we know if these interpreters are actually telling us what the guy is saying, you know? Because the guy who says it, he can't understand what the interpreter is saying in English, and we can't understand what he's saying in Japanese. He could be making up a whole different story, you know? You ever think about that? Especially this guy who apparently has been ripping off his boss. So, yeah, I saw that story coming out. But the Dodgers beat the Padres today 5-2. to open the Major League Baseball season. Clemson is playing Presbyterian tonight. Tigers coming off a big win last night, and they are scoreless in the top of the second. The Presbyterian women play Sacred Heart. That's tonight, right? In the
7 o'clock.
Four over the Colonial Life Arena. Presbyterian, Sacred Heart, the winner gets to play the Gamecocks at 2 o'clock on Friday. We'll be right back. More sports talk in just a moment. All right, welcome back, everybody. Sports Talk here on the Sports Talk Media Network. Phil Kornblut and Chris Bergen. Busy, busy 90 minutes ahead. Stay with us. Going to hear from the Gamecocks here in a little bit. 7:30, it'll be Major Downer joining us. Big edition of SC Wild tonight here on Sports Talk. Very quickly, since he's waiting, before we get to the Gamecock players, let's go to Gamecock Larry in Swansea, first with us tonight here on Sports Talk. Gamecock Larry, welcome in. How are you?
I'm doing just fine, Mr. Phil. I just want to wish you well. I'll tell you, you won't need to change clothes up in Memphis. You just can wear the same ones back Saturday morning. But
What if something happens and I need to change clothes? I mean, if it's an absolute necessity that I change clothes.
Ain't nothing going to happen as far as Clemson is concerned, so you can take an extra set just in case something else happens. But, and, Chris, you're going to really enjoy it up there in the snow.
No doubt.
You're gonna be there, and then I guess you'll be there to the Final Four. And Pat, my buddy Pat, you're gonna leave us, but don't forget old Gamecock Larry. Pick up the phone sometime and call him, and let's talk about the old time. But I wish you the best, and I enjoyed talking to you on the phone. Okay, I'll talk to you later, Mr. Phil. Go ahead and take an extra set. You may need them.
Thank you, Larry. Yeah, you know, when you go on the road, Chris, you should always take something to change into, right? Because accidents do happen.
Indeed. I always come prepared. I always overpack. So I'm packed for stuff until Sunday, so I'm good to go.
That's optimistic. That's very optimistic. We've got South Carolina Clemson playing softball tonight in the Palmetto Series, and it is a 2-2 game in the top of the third. So they've got a good one going on there up at Clemson. And we have a home run by Clark, a two-run homer for Clark for the Tigers in the bottom of the first. The Gamecocks had a pair of RBI singles in the top of the first, so both teams scoring in the first inning. 2-2 top of the third. No Valerie Cagle tonight for Clemson. She is out for some reason. Okay, let's go back to the setting and the scene in Pittsburgh today. Chris, over at the, what do they call the arena?
It's the PPG Paints Arena.
PPG Paints Arena, not the PNC. That's in Raleigh. I like that, PNC Arena. You were there with all the teams and the players and the coaches, and in particular the Gamecocks. Let's let you lead us into Lamont Paris.
Yeah, each team had a chance to have players and then their head coach come in and speak. Started this morning with Akron. They were the first team on the floor at 11 o'clock and migrated through Creighton and then ultimately ended up with Oregon going to the podium first. Dana Altman spoke after two of his players, and then the Gamecocks got their chance, and we'll hear from Michi Johnson and Talon Cooper and also B.J. Mack in a little while, but after they spoke, head coach Lamont Paris stepped to the microphone, and the first question he was asked is, how do you compare Oregon to anybody else that the Gamecocks have played this season? Here's what Coach Paris had to say a bit earlier today here in Pittsburgh.
I don't know that there's a good comp in our league or even anyone on our schedule that we played that would really work to prepare us for what they do. But they're really talented. You want to talk about growth. They've had a lot of growth as a team, too. They've just, due to injury and whatnot, they've had a lot of different lineups and guys in and out. And so, if you look at the history of Dana Altman's teams, this is the time that they put it together. And so they've done that once again. It's a very versatile team. They can score in a variety of ways. I mean, they can beat you up on the inside. They also have some accomplished scorers on the perimeter. They're capable of shooting the ball. But what they really do is attack aggressively, and they're really effective at that. But talented team that is also playing their best basketball right now. And, I keep saying that. I think when you get into the NCAA tournament, you're going up against a team that's really talented, or you're going up against a team that's extremely hot, or sometimes you go up against a team that's both of those things. And so you have to play well. You have to play well this time of year, and certainly they are playing well.
You've had so many NCAA tournament experiences as an assistant. Is there something that, Keith or Bo Ryan or even Greg Gard did that you take with you now when you bring teams to the NCAA tournament? And is there a way, do you mesh all the different things you liked about the way those guys handled it that you take with your team now?
Here's what I'll say. I think for the most part, at all those places, all the great coaches that I've been blessed to be around and work with, I think it's what we did leading up to the tournament, whether that was conference tournament, NCAA tournament, NIT, any sort of postseason play. I think it's, by and large, all the things that we did leading up to it that made it to where you were bound to have postseason tournament success, because everything to the guys was kind of the same, even though none of it's the same. None of it's the same. Their families aren't going to act the same. People that have never come to a game are going to travel to a game because it's the NCAA tournament. Nothing is the same. There's more media. There is more scrutiny. None of it's the same. But in all those places, we had prepared so consistently. And I think that's part of the reason why this team has had a lot of success away from home, because we've prepared so consistently that performing, and that's what you want to do, is get out there and perform, it's a little easier to get through the other stuff to just getting down to playing, to the nuts and bolts of playing basketball, having fun, and then performing.
Alex Jones with TheBigSpur.com. Obviously, Talon and Studi were battling some injuries from the SEC tournament. I was wondering if you could provide an update on those guys.
Yeah, I think there's been good progress on behalf of each of those guys. Miles Studi, his injury was a little more significant in that he had to miss some game time. But he's made good progress. So I expect him to be available at some level. We'll see what that looks like in terms of what percentage of his usual self he is, in terms of mobility, in terms of absorbing contact and being able to continue to play the way that he needs to be an effective piece for us. And then Talon was the same. I think he's at a pretty high percentage of full health, and he'll be ready to go.
Yeah, John. Three of the guys up there before you, and they all seem so calm and collected, and I've watched you in big games, and I guess I want to know, what is the secret? I know the players feed off their coach. What is your secret of staying so calm?
I think it leads back to what I just was saying in the other question. So much of my belief and our belief comes down to our preparation and what is happening in our preparation and our conviction in what we do, our belief in how it works out for us to win, and the reproducibility of those things. I don't think we have to break any records in terms of three-point field goal percentage in order to have success. I think when you have such a belief in your process, such a belief in your system, such a belief in your guys, that's me and them, and that's them and me, and what we do, that I think there's no real overreacting. You know, stuff's going to happen. That's just the way it is. And the sooner you can accept that it happened and figure out what the next thing to do and maybe how to prevent it from happening again, what the new normal, that was a phrase that we were all getting accustomed to a couple years ago. Whatever that ends up being in a college basketball game, whether that's, all right, our starting point guard or center has his fourth foul with 9 minutes left. Well, what's the new normal now, and how do we do that, and what does it do? I think the belief in all that stuff allows you to handle those things. And I just had never really been an overreactor on game day in particular. You know, at practice, there's sometimes I'll turn it up. But I need a result, and we need something to happen the rest of the practice. We get on game day, guys got to play. They got to feel good about themselves, you know. I do a lot of teaching. I always use the analogy, you know, if you're in calculus class and you're not understanding how to do something in your calculus class, I'm not sure your teacher is screaming it at a different volume makes you learn it better. So, you know, I'll turn up when guys are not trying, when they're doing things that they know they're not supposed to do, but they really try hard to do what we ask them to do, so there's not a lot of that. Honestly, we get out there and we play. Stuff happens. Some of it's good. A lot of it's good usually. Some of it's not so good. And then we got to pivot and make another adjustment based on what's out there. And I think you have to have a cool, calm mind in order to do that.
Okay, some comments from Lamont Paris. All of it's on our website, sportstalksc.com. He's a really good speaker, and he speaks logically, and he speaks in a very common way. I mean, he makes things kind of simple, I think, when you ask him a complex question.
That's why I think it's a shame USC does not make him available more often to the media, because you'll have to go to our website, as Phil mentioned, at sportstalksc.com to listen to his entire press conference so you can hear him mix in the word metamorphosis. Most college basketball coaches don't say things like metamorphosis, but I thought his explanation as to why his demeanor on the sideline is so calm, for lack of a better term, was outstanding. I never looked at it that way because I'm old school. I think every now and then players need a kick in the backside, but his point about, you know, in calculus class, if you're struggling to figure out what's going on, your teacher yelling at you to get it better is not going to fix the problem. And it just speaks to me what I think of the man himself as a coach and as a person. I think he's a genius in his ability to break down basketball, Phil, as you pointed out, too. It's just basic form. He's got certain rules, the way he sets up things defensively, and you cannot violate those rules or you'll come sit beside him. But he really doesn't have anything to do on offense. He just lets those guys go out and play. And I think that's why they're able to excel offensively, because they go out and they're fluid and there's not a whole lot of pressure to do things properly, because there's really no structure to their offense. They just go out and hoop, as he said before. The structure is on the defensive side of the coin, and I think that's why they've been so good on that end of the floor this year.
Going to hear from the players after the break. I tell you who I think might be, and I'm kind of reaching here a little bit, who I think might be a wild card is your guy from Coastal, Ibrahim Adiba. He's been playing more and more of late. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's an interesting matchup for people because of his length, because he plays in the backcourt. I could see him drawing a lot of minutes in critical moments of this game coming up tomorrow, maybe to give Oregon a different look, maybe to give South Carolina a little bit of a different look in their lineup. He must be healthy enough, and I think he can do some good things for them.
Yeah, he went through their practice today. I actually got over to say hello to him for a moment. He came over and gave me a big hug. I was surprised he recognized who I was, so that was kind of cool. But, yeah, I think he could be a difference maker, especially if Lamont Paris wants to deploy that 1-3-1 zone of his that he's had so much success with, especially with Zach Davis at the point. I think you could put Ebo in there as well. Let him run for – he's going to be limited. If you get 4 or 5 minutes from him tomorrow, that's 4 or 5 minutes that one of your other guards doesn't have to play. But I think the other wild card maybe Josh Gray and how well he can handle and physically stand up against Infale Dante, the 6'11 kid from Oregon who's playing extremely well, averaging a double-double. He's going to be a matchup problem for USC. So how do they handle him? I think Josh Gray's got to play big minutes for them tomorrow.
And protecting the basketball, just looking at some of Oregon's numbers here, going through their tournament run, and we've talked about this already, they are extremely dangerous at taking the ball from you. And so protecting the basketball, they've created 19 steals in their last two games of the tournament against Arizona and Colorado. They had 19 steals in those
too.
Two games. Beg pardon?
I said, and against good teams.
Yeah.
Arizona's got a chance to go to the Final Four. That's how good they are, and we'll find out how good Colorado is a little bit later on tonight. It's not like they were doing that against the, you know, some directional school. These were pretty good basketball teams they were facing.
Yeah, yeah. All right, let's run to the break. Want to come back and hear from the players. Which players will we hear from?
Meechie Johnson, Talon Cooper, and B.J. Mack. They sent in the heavy hitters today, and they all spoke at the same time, so we've got a few minutes with all three of them.
All right, that sounds good. We'll hear from those three. Then we'll come back in the second hour, do a little football with South Carolina, hear from offensive coordinator. And also the SEC announced the SEC football schedules for 2025. No surprises. Just take the schedules for this year and flip the home and away, and you'll have what you'll have in 25. Back in a moment.
I'm attorney Jim Corbett. That's the sound of a big hit on you and your car or truck. I've been an attorney for more than 30 years, helping people who get injured in car wrecks and truck wrecks. If you have serious injuries, call Jim Corbett, 803-765-2968, or email me at jim@jimcorbettattorney.com. That's C-O-R-B-E-T-T. I don't get paid unless I recover for you. Jim Corbett Attorney, for your best recovery from a big hit, 803-765-2968, or jim@jimcorbettattorney.com.
George Bryan for Tsunami Bar Sports, our inventor, David Abernathy, has always said Tsunami Bar technology allows us to take the training to the grass. Now I know through my sport of golf that natural agility can be converted to athletic ability. And why is this, Tsunami Robbie?
Transferring the training to the grass. This may be the most undervalued characteristic of the Tsunami flexible bar technology. The Tsunami bar action loads and unloads at the concentric and eccentric transition points. This is what we call reversal forces. And the Tsunami bar is the only bar and training device that I know of that can train these reversal forces adequately at speed.
Hey, this is Phil Kornblut. The Tsunami bar is a terrific training device whether you're working on your fitness or your golf game. It's convenient, it's easy to use, and you won't feel beat up afterwards. Be sure to click on the digital ad on sportstalksc.com and get 5% off any order using promo code BBB5. Don't wait. Order today.
Hi, this is Major Billy Downer, and coming up tonight at 7:30, it's another edition of SC Wow from the Department of Natural Resources on the Sports Talk Media Network.
You've put in the work for your education. The extra early, extra late, extra, extra work. That's because you understand education opens doors to better pay, better opportunities, and a better you. Being educated about playing the lottery is no different. It helps you be a better player, one who knows when to play and when to take a rain check. The lottery's a game, so let's keep it fun. Learn more at sceducationlottery.com/betteryou.
The Palmetto Sportsman's Classic is returning to the State Fairgrounds March 22nd through the 24th, sponsored by Farm Bureau Insurance. Join the fun at South Carolina's largest hunting, fishing, and outdoor expo, featuring over 350 vendors, a Doc Dogs competition, extreme raptor show, antler scoring, kids fishing pond, and much more family entertainment. We hope to see you at the Classic March 22nd through the 24th at the South Carolina State Fairgrounds. Tickets at the gate or at psclassic.com.
All right, let's continue with Chris in Pittsburgh with the Gamecocks, with the players, Chris.
Well, when you have two graduate students that have played as many minutes as Talon Cooper and B.J. McAv, and then you also have a junior who's sort of the glue for your team and Michi Johnson, those are the guys you send to the podium right before the NCAA tournament. That's exactly what USC did today with Talon Cooper, Michi Johnson, and also B.J. Mack taking questions from the media. And we start with one from the radio voice of the Gamecocks. Actually, Derek Scott was here. He opened up the Q&A with the guys.
Derek Scott, Gamecock Sports Network. Michi, when you found out you get to come this close to home and play, obviously you guys were excited just to make the tournament, to be a part of this. But when you found out it's going to be Pittsburgh, as close to Cleveland as you could be, what went through your mind? What has it been like in terms of the family and the friends who are, I'm sure, wanting to be a part of this for you?
It felt good. Like I said before, I kind of already knew it. Like, I knew it was going to happen. I knew God was going to make all this plan how I wanted to. And got a lot of family and friends coming down to support. Haven't got to play in them, in front of them since high school. So just being able to see all of them come to the game is going to be a blessing. And I got a good group of guys around me that's going to be there working hard throughout the whole game, trying to win. So it's exciting.
For Michi and Talon, obviously a lot of focus on Jermaine Cousinard being a former Gamecock. What do you see on film from him? And is there maybe a guard you face in the SEC this year that's kind of similar to how he plays?
I mean, yeah, he's a good player. You know, still watching a lot of tape on him, but obviously he's a good player. Played here before. Don't know too much about him, but, you know, we'll see how it goes tomorrow.
Talon?
Yeah, he's a good downhill driver. Can shoot the three ball, look good. But I couldn't compare him to anybody in SEC, but he just plays his own game and gets to his spots.
When we talk about being able to buy into a system, especially the system that's so much different than maybe what other programs run across the country, what do you think allowed this team this year to be able to buy in so quickly to what Lamont is trying to do when maybe other players wouldn't want to play in the system?
Yeah, I mean, Lamont, he allows you to play your game. And with that, you know, when you have great guys and you build a great team, which, you know, the coaching staff did this year, you know, we just play for each other. That's all it's about. We said before, and you've seen all year, it's been different guys' nights, 25 for this guy, 25 for that guy. And, you know, next day is somebody different, and we're all happy at the end of the day because we're winning, and now we're in this position. So it's just about buying in and winning. You know, if that's the main goal, then everybody eats at the end of the day.
Justin Guerrero with the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. BJ, you guys obviously have a lot of older talent on this team, but Colin's a guy who's certainly come in and made a pretty big splash as a freshman. Just what has it been like for you just watching him develop just as a college player in a practice setting throughout the course of the season, and what does he bring to your team?
Colin's been bringing in a lot of great energy. You've seen the work that he's been able to put in since coming back earlier in the season. So just the work that he's put in just to be able to get back, coming in, doing two-a-days to get back right, to try to catch up to speed with us. So it's just been a blessing just to see that. You know, you don't really see a lot of freshmen coming in, making a big impact like that, like he has so far. So we're just happy to have him, happy for him to be healthy and be able to get on the run that he's doing.
Oregon, for like the first couple months of the season, seems like a very different team than what they were in the Pac-12 tournament. How do you guys balance watching film of what they did throughout the body of work of the season, and or do you just kind of focus on what they did the most recent games?
Michi, you want to start and work your way down?
I mean, yeah, obviously you want to be playing your best basketball right now. So we're honestly looking at that, seeing what they're doing. A great team, got great pieces, but we have obviously grown too. And they got to see us tomorrow too. So it's just a matchup. You know what I'm saying? It's just a matchup. It's March Madness. It'd be fun. And you go from there.
Yeah, like we watched film on their recent games, and you know, they're playing some really good basketball right now. But also they haven't faced our defense, so we'll put that to test tomorrow.
Yeah, it's kind of looking back at their games earlier. You got to see a lot of like how they've grown and how the pace of play that they played at from earlier, but they're playing great basketball right now. So you really want to focus in on really how they're playing right now.
All right, thoughts from the Gamecock players this afternoon in Pittsburgh. And as Oregon team, they're a team that lost to Syracuse early in the year. You heard the question about the difference, the way Oregon was playing early versus the way they are playing now. They lost to Syracuse early in the year. Of course, we know Syracuse turned out to be a very average team. But they also, they lost to Alabama by 8. So that's kind of gives you a little bit of an indication. But that was back in November, December. Hard to judge a team, Chris,
yeah,
from back then to where they are now. So much changes.
Yeah, and most teams are not going to, unless they're an undefeated team, and they played that way all season long. Most teams, when you get to this time of year, what happened in November and December non-conference really has no bearing on who they are now. And I think the Gamecocks are taking the right approach. See what they did this past weekend at the Pac-12 tournament, because that's more than likely the team you're going to see tomorrow.
Yeah, I agree. Top of the hour break. We'll be back.
Welcome back to Sports Talk on the Sports Talk Media Network. You can reach the guys with the South Carolina Education Lottery lucky number, 888-898-2525. That's 888-898-2525. Now back to Phil, Chris, and Pat with the second hour of Sports Talk on the Sports Talk Media Network.
All right, welcome back, everybody. It is Sports Talk. Sports Talk on the Sports Talk Media Network. Good to have you with us here on a Wednesday night. And looking forward to what we have coming up in this half hour. I'm going to hear from USC's offensive coordinator, Dowell Loggins, here in just a moment. Update a few other notes for you, give you some recruiting. And then at 7:35, it'll be Major Billy Downer with tonight's edition of SC Wild. And looking ahead to the weekend at the State Fairground with the Sportsman's Classic, and also tonight as a special guest, Jay Cantrell will be joining him, and they're going to be talking about turkey hunting. So you want to stay tuned for that coming up 7:35 tonight. Another edition of SC Wild from the Department of Natural Resources here on Sports Talk. Phil Kornblut on the way to Memphis. Not there yet. We'll get there in the morning in plenty of time to watch practices and listen to the press conferences. And we have Chris Bergen, of course, in Pittsburgh with South Carolina. He's been doing that today. And Pat Daniel back at our studios in downtown Columbia. Now, let's update a few things. Clemson's leading Presbyterian in baseball, 4-1, bottom of the third. The Tigers scoring 3 runs in the third inning to open this up. Overtop with a 2-run homer, and Wright with a solo homer. So the Tigers got the long ball going. Meantime, right next door at the softball field, which backs up to the baseball stadium at Clemson, so they've got doubleheader action, double barrel action going on up at Clemson. South Carolina leads Clemson in softball 3-2 as they play in the bottom of the fifth inning. Cummings homered to left field for the Gamecocks in the top of the third to give them this 3-2 lead. And this is a matchup of two nationally ranked teams, Clemson number 11, South Carolina number 23. But Clemson's kind of held the upper hand in this series in recent years, have they not, Chris?
Oh, yeah, no doubt. Ever since Clemson started softball, they've sort of jumped to the head of the line in the state. And by the way, the Clemson PC baseball game is actually at the Drive Stadium in Greenville.
Oh, that's right. That's right. My bad. So, that's right.
Neutral site, so to speak, between those two.
It would have been a good story had they been playing, you know, back-to-back there. But you're right. It is over at Fluor Field, right?
Yes.
In Greenville, yeah. Thanks for correcting that. Okay, a few other notes to tell you about on this Wednesday night, because we got other things going on besides the basketball and all that. SEC today decided to announce their league schedule for football in 2025. It will once again be an eight-game league schedule, for everybody. And all you got to do is take the league schedule for 2024 and just flip it. The games you're playing at home, you'll play away. The games you're playing away, you'll play at home. So South Carolina, SEC games in 2025, home games against Alabama, Kentucky, Oklahoma, Vanderbilt, road games, LSU, Ole Miss, Missouri, and Texas A&M. Hate it from a coverage standpoint when they have Missouri and Texas A&M on the road in the same year. That's a pop to the expense account. But keep this in mind, too. So the Gamecocks in 2025 will have home games with Alabama, Kentucky, Oklahoma, and Clemson. Clemson comes to Columbia in 25. Pretty attractive home schedule, along money. With whoever else they have coming in 2025. And, of course, Vanderbilt. That's a pretty pretty attractive home schedule they'll have in 25.
I would think so, and I think Gamecock season ticket holders have got to be extremely excited. Now, the problem is when you have those big attractive matchups, you get more excited when your team can contend, and those aren't going to be easy games to win, even though they are at home.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, a couple of other things to tell you about. South Carolina women, second team All-American AP, Camilla Cardoso, and honorable mention was Tahina Paupau. And another Coach of the Year honor for Dawn Staley. She was named the Sporting News Coach of the Year. Boy, Kirk Ferentz had an incredible comment today. We retweeted it. Apparently, this must have been a spring practice press conference he was having. He was asked about star lineman Caden Proctor, who was from Iowa, who signed with Alabama, who left Alabama, transferred to Iowa after the coaching change, and now is transferring back to Alabama. And basically, in the middle of his comments, he was asked about it, and he said, well, we were played like fools. He came and took almost all our NIL budget, and now he's going back to Alabama. That's pretty sharp comment there from a head coach.
It is, but I get his frustration. I mean, it's more of a frustration with the system, isn't it, as opposed to the specific player. You can just use him as an example. But, yeah, you want to talk about setting up some guardrails. That should be one of them. If you transfer, you should not be able to transfer back to the same institution you left within 6 months. There ought to be some sort of time frame. And also, if you leave, you should have to pay the NIL money back to the school, don't you think?
I don't know, man. What will the court say? Because the courts say you can't stop them from doing anything right now.
Now, this is true.
Until they get some sort of protection. By the way, did you know this? I didn't know this till I was speaking with someone today. I talked about the Clemson lawsuit against the ACC and where that might eventually go. And, you know, talking about how the ACC can go to court and show how all these schools agreed knowingly with everything that was in the contracts in the various things that they signed, the exit agreements and the media rights agreements and all of that. You know who was the this was pointed out to me, the chairman of the ACC President's Committee when they signed the rights deal with the ACC. You know who the president was or who the chairman of that committee was? It was Clemson
Only
president Jim Clements.
Me.
Yeah, it was Clemson president Jim Clements. And so, you know, I'm just saying, if this thing goes to a trial and the ACC attorneys want to put these ADs or these presidents on the stand and say, you know, did you know what you were signing when you signed it? And Dr. Clements, you were the head guy here, and you glowingly approved of the document. So how can you be suing now over abuse and trying to get freedom and break the contract and all that kind of stuff? I just think from a layman standpoint, not a lawyer standpoint, from a layman standpoint where I sit looking at this, I think these are some of the things that Clemson and Florida State and anybody else that wants to take on the ACC, some of the questions they're going to have to answer and overcome to get their way, whatever their way happens to be. We're not even sure what they're trying to do here, break free of the ACC. Or are they just sending a message? Is Clemson just sending a message here to say, look, we did everything that we could here. We're locked into this thing, but we tried. We tried to shake the tree, and the result is the result here, you know, because we don't know how this thing is going to end up eventually. It may be years before any of this is settled either in court or through some sort of out-of-court settlement, which I think a lot of people think this is where it will head to at some point, because it's going to get expensive, right? It's going to get expensive for both the schools and the ACC to drag this stuff out in court.
Oh, yeah, and then what is your end game? If Clemson and Florida State do get out of the Atlantic Coast Conference, you've got to have some place to go. I doubt either one of them want to be in a similar circumstance that Notre Dame is in and be independent in football, because they don't command. I doubt, you know, ESPN is going to walk up to Clemson and say, we want to put you on an exclusive contract by yourself. like NBC has done with Notre Dame. And if you don't have a place to go, you sue the ACC. How do you repave and rebuild the relationships that you have tarnished probably irreparably in the Atlantic Coast Conference by taking the league to court? I mean, this is unprecedented stuff.
Yeah. Very, very interesting stuff to be played out here moving forward. A couple of other things. Former USC defensive back Jalen Dickerson hired as the cornerbacks coach at Murray State, where Jody Wright is now the head coach. Something I've been meaning to mention, it's been sitting here in our bookmarks. I just haven't had a chance to get to it, but we should. It is the coaches who have been selected to the South Carolina Athletic Coaches Hall of Fame. This was done earlier this month, so I do want to mention these coaches. Chris Miller, football coach, of course, in the upstate for many, many years. Al Berry, very successful baseball coach and football coach, primarily in the Midlands. Coach Chuck Parker won 4 state championships, coach of the year 7 times. This was in cross country and track and field. Tim Walsh, 37-year career. James Island, Lugoff Elgin, Rock Hill, Berkeley, Cane Bay. 3 state championships in wrestling. R.L. Skinny Gardner, 30 years working with young people on the field, on the court, on the diamond. 15th winningest baseball coach in South Carolina history. 4 state championships in basketball. So congratulations to those folks inducted into the South Carolina Athletic Coaches Association, or named for induction into the association's Hall of Fame. Now, to USC offensive coordinator Dowell Loggins, who met with the media today along with Clayton White, as the Gamecocks have an off day in terms of on-the-field work with their spring practice, so they brought the coordinators in for a chance to take questions and update folks on their respective sides of the football. Here is the OC at USC, Dowell Loggins, talking with the media this afternoon.
The message to those guys is the team that gets the guy that gets the team in the end zone the most will have the greatest chance to be the guy, and that's what we're going to judge it on. I've been a part of teams that have ugly series the production outweighs how pretty it is. I remember going back when I was in college, we had in our quarterback room, we had a kid named Matt Jones, Tavares Jackson, Ryan Sorhan, and myself and Rhett Lashley. So obviously the top 3 guys all played in the NFL, and Rhett and I were slappies. But Matt Jones was a really, really good player in college football, but really a bad practice player until we put the ball down in scrimmage. And also we're in a scrimmage, he's running with the 3s because Tavares Jackson played like 12, 13 years in the NFL, big, powerful thrower. And Matt's in there, and it's like 4 series in a row we score. And at that point, it's like, all right, this guy's he's a bad practice player, but he gets the team in the end zone. It was a lesson to myself at that point, even as a player. Like the guy that gets the team in the end zone the most in scrimmages and in practice and operates the best is going to be the guy who's a quarterback.
How do you go about, as far as splitting the reps and everything, and can you talk about the 3, what each of the 3, Lenoris, Robbie, and Davis, Bevel, have offered to you guys?
And Luke Doty and Dante Reno are also in that, so there's 5 guys getting reps right now. And the message was the same to all of them. When the guys were coming from the portal or guys that were here now, there's not a name starter. Lenore Sellers did take the first reps yesterday because he had been here. He had earned that. He was the backup last year. Luke Doty plays multiple positions, so he's rotating between quarterback, wide receiver, special teams, doing those things. Dante is a very, very young freshman that's going to get an opportunity to compete and figure out. And then Davis is a guy who's played a lot, so he's going to compete. I think he might actually have the most starts out of everyone. And then Robbie obviously has been to Oregon and Auburn now here, and he started a lot of games in the SEC. So we're going to rotate. There's going to be days when Sellers took the first reps yesterday, but he did not take all the reps with the ones. Obviously, the other part of this, the quarterback competition, is you're working around the other part of your roster. So the healthier you are, the more reps you get, because what happens is offensive line starts getting banged up, so reps start getting cut. Right now we're healthy and we're majority of our guys are out there, so we're going to rotate. We're going to rotate daily. You know, because the other thing it affects is that we got these coach to quarterback systems now that we're getting to work with. So we're going to continue to rotate. We can't put all five guys in that system right now. So we'll rotate. Most time there'll be two guys that are alternating with the ones. Like in the way we do it, the ones will go, the twos will go, the ones will go, and then the twos will come back. So there's sometimes it's like, hey, Lenoris, you're going to take the first rep with the ones and that second stack. Then Davis, Robbie, Dante, Luke, you've got it. So we're going to continue to rotate them. The evaluation process is it's every day is an interview, but it's these accumulations of these practices, and then we start to scrimmage, those things matter as well.
Probably a little early to ask this, but when you're scrimmaging and trying to figure out like the running aspect of playing the position, have you guys planned what that might look like as far as allowing the quarterbacks to be live?
Yeah, last year we made those guys live, and we made outside of Spence because we knew what we had with him. He had such a resume of work. But Lenoris and Robbie and Luke Doty as well, they're athletic guys. So you don't really get to see everything until you make those guys live. So those discussions will happen. They've already happened between Coach Beamer and myself. And we brought on Mike Shula as an offensive analyst as well, replacing. So he'll be involved in that. He's been through so many of these quarterback competitions and got a wealth of knowledge as well. So he'll be involved in those conversations as well. But just rotating through guys, making sure that as these guys rotate, like how much is too much. You got to get the if they have unique qualities as a runner, like you got to see that because that does measure into the competition.
Would you like to leave spring with a definite number one going in the fall?
I would love to start spring with a number one, but right now we're going to let this play out. There's no timetable on setting a depth chart. The most important thing right now is all these guys are getting reps and getting good work, and the more work they get, the better feel we'll have for them.
I got to follow up on the Mike Shula mention there. How did that come together? What was sort of the background on that?
Well, we lost a guy. The guy took a job with the Miami Dolphins, Sean Ryan, who helped us last year. And in this business, you're always looking to continue to bring in knowledge and bring in guys that can help you. And Mike is a guy that worked against a long time, and Coach Beamer had known him as well, and just got a ton of respect for him as an offensive mind and a quarterback guy. And so we had a chance to hire someone, and that's why we brought. You know, that's kind of where it was a good fit. From a resume standpoint, a character standpoint, a person standpoint, he makes us better.
I loved how he did that. What if he just said, yeah, and, you know, we added Urban Meyer to our staff here. Yeah.
Nick Saban's just coming on as an analyst.
Yeah, just nonchalantly just threw that in there. Yeah, yeah. Listen, I mean, Mike Shula, that's a pretty doggone big name. Former head coach at Alabama, former NFL quarterback, son of the Don. I mean, that's pretty big name coming to South Carolina. Nobody made a mention of that anywhere.
You know, I was joking with you while we were listening to that. It almost reminded me of us having Coach Gary Gilmore on last year when he just nonchalantly said, well, you know, this NIL stuff is a problem, but I won't have to worry about it because this is going to be my last year. Mm-hmm. And we were taken aback for a minute, and I think that's what happened today. Did he really say Mike Shula's an analyst? And I'm still trying to understand, sort of gravitate to what an analyst's role is within the organizations of these college teams. I mean, Georgia has, what, about 60 on their staff? I mean, you can add as many analysts as I think you can possibly maintain and feed. But I'm not quite sure. I mean, I'm guessing he'll bring his knowledge of working with, you know, NFL players, how to get to the league and what he did at Alabama and the like. But, I mean, what is – physically, what are they supposed to be able to do?
Well, I think – analyze. They are supposed to sit in on meetings, provide insight, you know, look at video, look at film. They can, I think they can be on the field. I don't know how much on the field instruction they can do, like hands-on.
Right.
I don't think you can step across that line because you're limited to 10 assistant coaches, you know.
Right.
I don't think you can become the 11th. But I think you can be out there and advise and stuff like that. I'm sure it's a loosey-goosey rule that gets violated everywhere across the country.
There's no question.
Yeah. All right. As we go to break, I'll tell you Montana State is leading Grambling 38-31. How about that comeback by Howard last night? Almost pulled it out of the fire.
That was a 38-31.
Yeah, Montana State's leading. Clemson 4-1 on Presbyterian, bottom of the fourth. And USC women softball 3-2 on Clemson in the bottom of the sixth. They play seven innings, don't they?
That is correct. And yeah, PC okay. with an early 10-9 lead in the playing game. Watch out, Gamecocks and Blue Hose.
Ooh,
two nights from now.
That would be something. Be back after the break. Recruiting.
Calling all turkey hunters. This is Major Billy Downer with the South Carolina Department of Natural Resources. Turkey season is coming soon. The most common accident while turkey hunting is failing to identify your target. Know the identifying features of a turkey. Make sure of your target and what lies beyond it before you pull the trigger. Remember, safe hunting is no accident. For more information on hunter education, visit dnr.sc.gov.
Hi, I'm Lisa Hostetler-Brown. Helping an aging loved one arrange for their care can be one of the most difficult things you will ever do. Fortunately, you don't have to navigate this maze alone. Lawyer Lisa's knowledgeable life care team can lead you down the right path. Visit lawyerlisa.com to see how we can help.
Call Lawyer Lisa. Experience the difference with Lawyer Lisa.
7511 St. Andrews Road, Irmo, South Carolina.
The Palmetto Sportsman's Classic is returning to the State Fairgrounds March 22nd through the 24th, sponsored by Farm Bureau Insurance. Join the fun at South Carolina's largest hunting, fishing, and outdoor expo, featuring over 350 vendors, a Doc Dogs competition, extreme raptor show, antler scoring, kids fishing pond, and much more family entertainment. We hope to see you at the Classic March 22nd through the 24th at the South Carolina State Fairgrounds. Tickets at the gate or at psclassic.com.
Hi, this is Major Billy Downer, and coming up tonight at 7:30, it's another edition of SC Wild from the Department of Natural Resources on the Sports Talk Media Network.
Hi, yes, I'll have the club sandwich and house salad.
You got it, sweetie. I'll throw in a pair of designer sunglasses as well.
Just lunch, thanks.
How about a week at my boss's oceanfront villa?
What?
When you join the South Carolina Education Lottery's Players Club, you get way more than you expect. More chances, more wins, and more surprises.
Today's special, a trip to low Earth orbit in a private spaceship.
Join the Players Club at seeducationlottery.com because more happens here.
Relax. Winter is finally over. It's time to get ready for a season of adventure. Escape the ordinary and get out on the road with an auto loan from Founders Federal Credit Union. From city streets to off-road trails, your journey begins here. Our low fixed rates can get you on the road in a ride that fits your lifestyle and budget, featuring no payments for up to 90 days. You can apply early for a pre-approved spending limit before you even start shopping. Let a Founders representative be your trusted advisor to make sure your purchase makes sense for you and your finances. Ask for a free auto insurance quote for a personalized plan to protect your purchase. Founders also offers mechanical breakdown protection that is competitive with most warranty plans available at dealerships. Head over to one of our 40 convenient office locations or visit foundersfcu.com to apply for an auto loan today or to see if you qualify for membership with Founders. Membership qualification required. Terms and conditions apply.
Okay, time for the recruiting report. Tonight, here on Sports Talk, it is brought to you by Seawells. Pat, next to last night to talk about the Roast Beef Friday coming up at Seawells. I know that's an event that's always near and dear to your heart and to your cholesterol figure.
That's exactly right, Phil. And tomorrow, Thursday, Seawells will bring you Southern Fried Chicken, pulled pork, and then teriyaki salmon. And where's the salmon from, Corn?
It is from the good old Congaree.
That's right. Right there in the Congaree. And let's see here. Friday, carved roasted sirloin of beef, little roast beef Friday, southern fried chicken, and shrimp Alfredo. And then don't forget all your local farm fresh veggies, salad bar, and dessert and gravy.
All right. And, of course, give Seawells a call for the best in catering, 803-771-7385, online at SeawellsCateringSC.com. Checked in with cornerback Onis Konanbany from Heathwood Hall, 62170, native of London, who actually was born in France, visited USC with his coach, Tamir Zimmerman, yesterday, coming back on Thursday. Loved it. Loves the attention he's getting from South Carolina. Really feels it from Shane Beamer and Torian Gray. They're coming at him hard. They like that he's a long, physical, defensive back who attacks the ball at its highest point. He likes Beamer, and he likes Gray a lot as well. South Carolina's got a good shot here. Official visit to Utah April 12th, North Carolina June 7th, Penn State June 14th, Tennessee June 21st, either Miami or Cincinnati in May, and he'll take one to USC as well. Gaffney offensive tackle Shed Surratt was offered by Tennessee, and Hartsville native Cesar Edwards transferring out from Missouri State. We'll be back.
Now on Sports Talk, it's SC Wild with Major Billy Downer of the Department of Natural Resources. Major Downer is here to take your questions about the great outdoors in South Carolina. Give him a call at 888-898-2525. It's SC Wild from DNR on the Sports Talk Radio Network.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Sports Talk on this Wednesday night. Now time for another outstanding edition of SC Wild from the Department of Natural Resources here on Sports Talk, hosted by the very handsome, the very debonair, and the always great sounding, now that he has his professional microphone, Major Billy Downer. Good evening, Major.
With that entrance, I'm not sure how to respond, but thank you so much for talking me up, Phil.
Absolutely. Glad to do it. How are you, sir?
I am doing much better. Like you, I've had my cold, whatever you want to call it, the crud,
yeah.
The pollen. I just got back from Georgia, and it wasn't any better down there. But we are coming out on the other side. I may sniff a little bit, but other than that, I think we're doing much better. But tonight's show, we're going to talk turkey. Decided I wouldn't start off with a turkey call because tomorrow at the Classic, we'll have plenty of that.
Yep.
We'll share that with the folks on the radio. But also want to welcome in to the show tonight, Jay Cantrell. He's one of our assistant big game biologists here at DNR, and we're going to talk turkey tonight. I'm sure some folks will have some questions. Even if they don't voice them, I'm sure he'll answer some of those because we're going to talk about the turkey season and the changes that DNR has proposed that are currently in the legislature right now. So, Jay, thanks for joining us tonight.
Yeah, great to be here.
So, Jay, let's just start off. Let's go ahead and dive right in for a minute. You know, turkey season is about to begin. We had the Youth Day this past Saturday. What's our reports right now from that? Do you know?
Yeah, we had, I think, just under 100 birds reported this past weekend for the youth. That was Youth Day in Game Zone 3 and 4, which is kind of the coastal plain. So not too bad, a little bit lower than what we had reported last year, but still a pretty good youth weekend.
All right. So as far as turkey season coming up this season here, our season is going to begin as it has for what, the last two or three years?
4 or 5 years now, I guess we've been in this this framework. Yeah. So
time just continues
so
to
yeah,
pass
we'll
on.
Start, yeah, it does. It flies. But yeah, it'll start this Friday, the 22nd, in the coastal plain there, our game zones 3 and 4, and it goes there till the end of April, and then kind of from the Midlands up, game zones 1 and 2, you know, the Piedmont and upstate mountains, it'll open up April 1st and go to May 10th, and so we'll have another youth weekend for the upstate coming up that weekend before the 1st. And WMA land statewide will open up on the 1st as well. So kind of some staggered starts depending on where you're at or if you're hunting private or public land. But, yeah, we're right on the doorstep for everybody.
All right, so let's kind of do a brief history of where our turkey season has been in the past 20 years. A lot of folks were familiar with the time that we had March 15th and the Orangeburg Lower Coastal Plain area opening date. And then like you said, five years ago, we went to a framework that was divided in the state where game zones 3 and 4 began March 22nd, just a little bit later, and ended April 30th. And then your game zone 1 and 2 opened up after that, April 1st, and closes on May 10th, which is the current framework we're under now. We also went to 3 gobblers per season. Is that correct? We dropped from 5 in a lot of areas.
Yeah, that's correct. And there was another iteration in between, you know, the historical, like you mentioned, March 15th opening that ran till May 1st in the kind of the lower coastal plain, you know, kind of Charleston down and Orangeburg over that area, and the rest of the state was April 1 to May 1. And then about 10 years ago, there was a change that put everybody on the same season. That was when we went to March 20 to May 5 statewide. And then we had another iteration, yeah, where we went to kind of where we are now. But, we've kind of had some changes over the years, some trying to kind of get some equality across the state, and then here lately to try to shift the seasons a little bit later to get more in line with breeding seasons and give some of these birds a chance to breed before the season opens. But we've had some changes, but it went from 5 to 3 as far as the bag limit. As you mentioned, now we've got some recommendations we made based on input from public meetings and surveys and some university research and looking at our long-term data sets. So we'll see if next year we're looking at something different. It's like you mentioned, it's in the legislature right now in the House, and we'll kind of see where it comes out the other end. But, we're looking at some proposed changes moving forward that right now, as it stands in the legislation and where we recommended it be going from a 3-bird to a 2-bird bag limit. So reducing the bag limit and then shortening the season a little bit from our 40-day season structure now to a 31-day season. And then the big thing is shifting the start date later. So it'd be an April 10 to May 10 season. That's the best for the bird based on the science and the research and had widespread support from the public. We did a series of public meetings across the state this past summer and online survey. And so we'll kind of see what happens, but it's some major changes for people, particularly in the low country where they've historically had that early start, but not quite as big a change for folks in the PD and the Piedmont and upstate that historically started April 1st.
So. All right. So let's back up a minute. Let's break this down for a minute. So we were at a 5-bird limit in a many counties. Yep. I remember way back when I remember back 30 years ago when the seasons weren't open in every county. Everybody didn't have 5-bird limits. It was all over the place. And so we went to 5 birds. We've dropped to 3 birds. Now we're looking at dropping to 2. Let's talk about that for a minute. So obviously if we're dropping our limit, what does our science tell us about the turkeys right now? What's going on?
Well, we're in a long-term decline in South Carolina, and really it's not unique to South Carolina. This is something that's happening across the Southeast and really even showing up in the Midwest and some other parts of the country. But a long-term, you know, I say long-term, about a 2-decade slow gradual decline in turkey numbers, and that's all rooted in lower reproductive success and lower survival of poults the young of the year. So basically where we're at is our productivity and survival of our birds, you know, every year, the ones that are, you know, eggs laid and hatched and raised, is not keeping up with annual take from hunting, you know, from harvest, and then other non-hunting mortality that affects turkeys. So what we're basically losing more turkeys than we're adding every year. So it's a declining population, thus the need to cut back on, you know, bag limit and season length, you know, as an attempt to harvest fewer birds every year. So we're not, you know, losing ground every year. Hopefully we can get reproduction boosted back up. And that's where the season date change comes in, shifting the season later to line up closer to when the average hen in South Carolina lays her first egg and starts the nesting cycle, in hopes that we can get more breeding done. Because right now, with our research and the current season structure and looking at our harvest data, statewide, we're taking about 60% of our annual harvest prior to that date when hens start laying and nesting. So, which is, you know, the breeding is occurring, the bulk of it, leading up and just prior to that. So we're basically taking birds out during the peak of their breeding. And that's, you know, the science says that's having an adverse effect on breeding success and nesting success. So that's one of our attempts to try to get reproduction back up. So we're producing more birds every year and we can kind of get out of this hole. But it's twofold. We got to boost reproduction and we've got to put the brakes on harvest a little bit, so we can kind of get out of this decline and at least level things out and hopefully get an increase happening and getting more birds out there. So it's complex, and you know, there's other factors at play with habitat and predation and weather and all sorts of things, but what we can control on a statewide level is seasons and bag limits and methods to take, and so that's what we're trying to do.
That's a great point, Jay, because I think some people want to point out certain predators. A lot of people want to bring up coyotes. I know I've heard so many stories of people turkey hunting in the last few years that said every time they went out and started calling, they'd see a coyote, you know, almost immediately.
Right.
And I know studies have been all over the place on that, where they used to be it used to be, if I remember right, coyotes weren't that big of a impact on turkeys in comparison to other things. Is that still true, or is that possibly changing some?
No, that's still true, and there's been, you know, some recent research that's looked at that, and some diet studies on coyotes looking at, you know, DNA analysis of their scat and some other research. And they're still, I mean, they are a turkey predator, but they are still kind of low on the list. I think they're a turkey harasser more than a killer.
Because one shows up when you call doesn't mean he's always killing a turkey when he tries.
That's right. You know, they're not really built for that. You know, bobcats are better at that, and avian, you know, hawks and owls. But just because he shows up and is curious about the call doesn't mean they're necessarily taking a lot of turkeys. They do get some, but the research just doesn't show that they're that it's a huge part of their diet. And yeah, the bigger concern is things that eat eggs and eat young poults. And so it's more your raccoons, possums, skunks. And then, you know, a huge thing that a lot of people don't even think about is snakes, particularly your rat snakes. And, you know, they get a lot of nest, a lot of eggs, and even some, you know, really young poults. So, and then, you know, there's crows, there's hawks, there's owls, there's a wide array of predators. And, you know, bobcats, foxes, you name it. So coyotes are in that mix, but they're not the driver. You know, now if we're talking deer fawns, that's a whole nother thing. They right. They take more than their fair share of young deer, but turkeys, that's just not their strong suit.
So when a poult, you know, once the egg is hatched, so to speak, poults get out, just real quickly, how quickly do they begin to where they can fly? I think it's interesting for folks to understand that.
Yeah, so well, I kind of run through real quick the whole cycle. So, you know, a hen's going to lay an egg a day for 10 or 12 days, and a lot of people don't know that, you know, she doesn't just drop a whole clutch of eggs at once. She lays approximately an egg a day, and while she's laying, she's not incubating. She lays an egg and goes back to being a turkey for the rest of that day and, you know, flies up to roost at night, comes back the next day, drops an egg, does that for 10 or 12 days, and then when she's laid a complete clutch, which is, you know, 10 or 11 or 12 eggs. Then she starts to incubate, sitting on them to incubate them, 26 to 28 days, and then they hatch. And then, you know, they're on the move within a day or so. They're not, you know, hanging out in the nest very long. And then she, you know, is brooding them, keeping them, you know, warm and dry and getting them out to feed. And it's usually between 2 and 3 weeks of age before they can fly. You know, maybe 2 weeks they might can flutter up to some low limbs in a shrub or a bush. By about 3 weeks of age, they can fly short distances and kind of get up and limb hop up into a tree and roost up in a tree. By about a month old, they're doing pretty well. And so that's kind of the critical time for those poults is the first month. Once they get about a month old, they're in pretty good shape and can elude predators pretty well, and they're feathered out enough that they're not as susceptible to, you know, getting cold and wet. So that's that critical time there. But yeah, particularly the first 2 weeks when they're spending, you know, 24 hours a day on the ground, they're obviously very vulnerable and susceptible.
Pretty much everything
starts getting up. Yeah, absolutely. They're small, and you know they're not that fast, and they're not that wary, and so they, you know. But once they can start getting up and sleeping off the ground, that increases their survival a lot. But it's tough to be a, you know, we say all the time, it's amazing any of them live. It's tough to be a little baby turkey out there. So everything wants to eat them.
Absolutely. So moving back now, so kind of pulling all this together, that April 10th date is what has our studies, and how long was that study? I know we did a study for what? Is it a couple of years? So people understand that?
We did a 4-year study down at the Webb Center down in Hampton County.
So that was done in South Carolina. It wasn't done out of state. It was done on our birds.
Right. Yeah, and that established, you know, looking at a lot of birds with GPS transmitters on them, getting really detailed data. And that's where we came up with that, you know, kind of April 9th, 10th for the average date that a hen lays her first egg. So, and then there's been other studies in the Southeast, in Georgia, North Carolina, Louisiana, East Texas, Tennessee, Alabama, you know, they're all over the Southeast, you know, at similar latitudes. And that's really what drives this, is what latitude you're at, because you know, the timing of breeding and nesting is dictated by daylight length, photo period, because, you know, it controls hormone levels in these birds. And so, any rate, multiple studies across the Southeast all come in at that same point in time. But yeah, this was a project done in South Carolina, but there's supporting research all over. And so that roughly April 10th date is kind of where we're trying to get to protect as much breeding as possible, but still allow hunters time in the woods when there's really strong gobbling activity, because that's really what drives turkey hunter satisfaction, is hearing birds gobble. And so, you know, we want to push it as far as we can biologically to protect the bird, but we also want to start early enough to have good hunter satisfaction, and that's that kind of sweet spot right in there. And so that's what we're proposing. And like I said, so far, that's where the legislation is. We'll see where it ends up. But, you know, and that's not anything unique to South Carolina. A lot of states in the Southeast have been looking at similar things or trying that and moving, you know, shifting season dates, shortening seasons, lowering bag limits, pushing season dates later. So this is, you know, not something we just came up with out of the blue. You know, it's based on good science and data, and like I said, most every state is looking at similar things to try to help with this problem. It's not a unique problem, and it's not a unique solution. So.
All right. So just again, we did a lot of public meetings during the summertime. You alluded to that. And I think you said this, but I kind of wanted to recap. You, a lot of hunter support for this. Everybody I've talked to, seems to all understand that they're not seeing as many turkeys in a lot of areas. I mean, again, you may be in one area where turkeys are doing really well, and you know, and you may see a lot of turkeys in one spot. That doesn't mean everybody's seeing turkeys. And I hear more often than not people talking about not seeing as many turkeys as they have in the past. So I think a lot of from a standpoint of hunter support and sportsmen and women, that they all see that this is something that needs to be done.
Yeah, absolutely. That's kind of where we got to this. You know, we're doing another research project right now at Savannah Riverside, which is an unhunted population, that to really kind of get into this hunting effect. And we were thinking we'd let that project finish up and have some really strong data. But there was so much talk and interest and concern from the public, from hunters and landowners in the last couple of years, that we said, you know, it's time to move on this now. We had enough. We had 3 years of good data from that project that supported this. And like you said, yeah, so many people were starting to really notice the difference on the ground. You know, I tell people we've got data, you know, harvest data and our summer turkey, you know, brood survey data. And we can look at long-term data sets and kind of see this coming. It shows up in the data before it really shows up on the ground. So we've been talking about this problem and this decline for, you know, 10 or 12 years, but it's really been in the last year or two where it has showed up widely, you know. And as you mentioned, there's still places in the state that have good, you know, pockets that have good populations of birds. But it's gotten to be a widespread issue and a lot of concern. And so, yeah, there is support because people are cognizant of the fact that we have a problem and we need to do something to fix it. And when they kind of look at the data and the science, they say, yeah, this is not a good trajectory that we're on. It's not sustainable. And I talk to people all the time that say, you know, I want my kids and my grandkids to be able to turkey hunt and have turkeys. And so, you know, we're trying to make a change while there's still what? Enough birds out there to be impactful, you know. I mean, I don't want people to get the idea that, you know, we're running out of turkeys and there's no turkeys out there. I mean, there's still birds and still huntable populations. But it's gotten noticeably worse, and we're just trying to make a change before it gets really bad. You know, we don't want to have to shut down seasons and things like that. We want to just kind of put the brakes on and try to turn the tide and get this thing pointed back in the right direction. Widespread support.
Sure.
You know, a lot of interest in doing this.
So before we end tonight, let's recap what the season is now so that everybody understands. Don't confuse everybody. So March 22nd is opening day for game zones 3 and 4. Under the current framework, you can take one gobbler from March 22nd through the 31st.
Correct.
Correct. And again, that's trying to protect those gobblers from breeding. That's the current framework. So one gobbler from March 22nd to 31st, and that's in game zones 3 and 4 on private land. Game zones 1 and 2 will open up April 1st. And that, in April 1st, they can't take more than one gobbler from April 1st to April 10th. And that's in game zones 1 and 2. And then after dates, you can take the other remaining birds if you so choose and have the opportunity. Non-residents are limited to 2 gobblers.
After that.
That's right.
Yeah, so, one per day after that first 10 days.
That's right.
Yeah, and then so wildlife management, you know, public lands are April 1 to April 30th.
Absolutely. So private land, again, opens up in game zone 3 and 4 on March 22nd, which is this coming Friday. That's this Friday. And we'll have the Palmetto Sportsman's Classic for those that may need a few turkey calls, turkey vest, whatever you might need. The classic opens up Friday at 12 o'clock at the State Fairgrounds. It will be open Saturday and Sunday as well, Sunday through 5. Again, I think it's 9 to 5 on Sunday. Again, it's the second largest show at the State Fairgrounds other than State Fair. So pretty big deal. And Phil and I will be out there on Friday afternoon doing the show live, so you can come by and poke fun at Phil, not me. But
actually, it will be you and Smitty. You and Smitty will be out there. I'll still be a Memphis.
Well, good for you. I'll be.
You can pick. You pick on Smitty, and I'll eat some barbecue and say hey to Elvis for you.
There you go. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
But, Jay, I want to thank you again for tonight. A lot of information. Appreciate sharing that with us tonight.
Absolutely, and hope everybody has a safe and successful turkey season.
Thank you, Jay.
Thank you.
All right, Phil, that's going to wrap us up for tonight. Again, talking turkey, and season opens up this Friday.
Fantastic, Major. Great job, and get your rest and get ready for the Classic. I hate that I'll miss it, but Smitty will be there with you Friday. We'll have you guys on, and looking forward to hearing from you and your guest at the Classic.
No doubt. I'll see Smitty on Friday.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Thank you, Major. That's the Major, Billy Downer. And that is SC Wild from DNR here on Sports Talk. Quick update. They've gone to the ninth. USC Clemson softball. They're tied at 3. And baseball, Clemson leading Presbyterian 7-1. That'll do it. Thank you, Patrick Daniel. We'll see you tomorrow night. Thank you, everybody, for being with us. We'll see you from Memphis and Pittsburgh tomorrow night. Have a great one.